Will everyone in the Missouri Senate please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Elvin Matthews wrote, "Prayer then involves all things and is an attempt to bring all things into focus, to see all things as they really are, as seen by God." Heavenly Father, we come before you in prayer asking you to help us focus on what is truly important and for you to help us see things the way you would have us see them, through the loving eyes and a grateful spirit. Bless what we do according to your will and forgive our failures. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Krause, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaaf, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from Jefferson, Senator from Cole, Senator from the First. A quorum is present. The Senate is now in session. Read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 47th day, Monday, April 2nd, 2012.
Senator from 23rd. Wow.
Mr. President, I move further reading and the journal be suspended and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
I heard the motion made by the senator from Acrobatics. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Photographers from KRCG-TV have been given permission to take pictures in the Senate chamber today.
Thank you, Senator. We'll duly note it.
Without objection, Senator, the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Send it forward. Read the committee report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 677, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Senator, further committee reports?
No, Mr. President. Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate Bills for Perfection, the informal calendar.
Senate Bills for Perfection,
Bill
the informal
806.
Calendar. Sorry, the bill number again? Informal calendar, Senate Bill 806. The Senator from the 7th. Senator?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 806 with the committee substitute be taken up.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us with the substitute pending. Senator?
I now move that Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 806 be adopted. This bill, Mr. President, is the teacher quality bill. As we know and we've heard over and over and over that the most important thing to student achievement is a very good teacher. And Senate Bill 806 ensures that all Missouri students will have access to an effective teacher. There's several things that it does. One is it eliminates last in, first out. What last in, first out is when they have to decrease or reduce their staff, it will allow them to do it not by seniority, but by effectiveness of the teacher. So that they're able to keep those teachers that were hired later but have proven to be very effective. It will end forced placement. What it does is it allows principals to select the teachers that will be in their own school and allows the teacher to accept that or reject that offer. In other words, it will not continue a practice that we have right now of assigning teachers to a school and the principal has no say in it whatsoever. It creates a comprehensive evaluation system on multiple measures. With the most important one being value added or growth of the student. Right now, we take a snapshot of where students are, but what this will do is show how much value is added by each teacher. So we know what they test when they come in and what when they go out, and so we know the actual value that that teacher added, and that will be the highest priority in the evaluation. It will also separate evaluations from the collective bargaining process, so it's just a matter of teacher effectiveness based on student growth and other measures that the district determines they feel are important. It ends what we now have as pretty much a job for life once you've been there for 5 years, and it opens up, the teacher quality system opens up the opportunity for principals to use performance-based measures as a factor in personnel decisions. Teachers would be employed through a system of multi-year contracts, and all employment decisions, including pay, would be based on effectiveness. And by the way, this is not only for teachers, it's also for administrators and principals. And with that, Mr. President, I would renew my motion if there are no questions.
Does any senator wish to be heard on the motion to adopt the Senate committee substitute? Seeing that, Senator from the 10th.
The Senator from the 7th.
Does the Senator yield?
Yes, I do.
She yields, you may inquire.
Good morning, Senator. I just had a couple of quick questions as I was going over the bill. Did you say that there's a Senate committee substitute, but there's not a Senate substitute? Is that correct?
It's a Senate committee substitute, and it should have been available to you.
Oh, yeah, I've got it. I just wanted
okay.
to make sure. I just want to make sure I was in the right one.
Yes.
One question I had, I'd heard that at one point this version of the bill actually grandfathered in all current teachers, but I don't see that. Is this right now going to apply to all teachers moving forward?
Yes.
Okay, so any teacher who currently has tenure then would no longer have tenure and they'd be under this system then, is that correct?
They would go into multi-year contracts.
Multi-year contracts.
That the
okay.
districts themselves would make the decision on.
Okay, that makes sense. Can you tell me a little bit about, you talked about the performance-based piece, what is going to be the measuring stick? And this is an area that I'm not incredibly familiar with, but how are we going to be measuring the performance for the teachers?
Well, the district would really set up their own evaluation system of how they want to work it. So probably every district would be a little bit different, but DESE will come up with sort of a model, if you will, that districts could adopt if they want to, or adopt part if they want to. 51% of the evaluation would be based on student growth. So that would be obviously a large part of it. If the teacher is a subject area teacher on which we test, like with the map, then obviously that's objective and easy to find. But teachers like, say, an art teacher, that teacher, the district would put together what their measures are and how they would rate that.
Okay, that makes sense. And so the individual school districts would have the flexibility to,
yes,
to do it the way they want to do it. I want to make sure, I don't know all of lingo. You're an expert in this area, and I am not. Student growth, that's not necessarily overall test scores so much as if you've got a kid that comes into a specific teacher's class, and it's a third grade class, and they're not reading yet, and then this teacher, by the end of the year, has gotten this one child to the point where they're reading at the first, second, or third grade level, that would be growth for that teacher. Is that correct?
Yes, it would, and I'm really glad you brought that up. That's a very astute question, because some teachers feel like, oh, well, if I don't have all the gifted kids, I'm not going to do very well on this system. Actually, a teacher that takes a child that is very at risk, that is very behind, and moves them forward 2 years, has the opportunity to actually make more because of that student growth. So,
okay.
So it really measures, not the snapshot, and you get penalized for a child that's 2 years behind or 4 years behind. You actually can get more money because you actually bring that child ahead.
Okay, and that's one of the things that the educators in my area have been trying to explain to me, that it's not all about test scores. Specifically, some of our charter schools that are working with kids who maybe English isn't their first language, or they're coming in,
sure,
you know, in an alternative school setting, and that growth of the individual students is not necessarily reflected by these test scores. So I just wanted to...
Right. It answers some of those questions to make sure those demographics are taken into account.
Okay.
So that,
okay,
people don't get penalized.
The other couple of questions I had, just tell me whether or not these are still in the bill. Is there something that prohibits employment, that a school board can't employ members as a teacher if they're related within so many?
Yes, yes. It,
okay,
is in there. Like the fourth, you probably know how to say that word.
The fourth degree of consanguinity.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, the only thing that concerned me about that is I was trying to do the math on what the fourth degree of consanguinity is, and I think it's like a third cousin or something. And you may be able to tell me differently. What concerns me is that especially in smaller towns, we may not have anybody left who could be a school teacher if people on the school board can't have their relatives be employed as teachers. So I was wondering if you would be open to tightening that up a little bit and not having it extend all the way out to the fourth degree of consanguinity.
I would be open to that. My guess is when this was written, my guess is that's pretty common right now. Trying to look, have the analyst look in my eyes and recognize me for that. But my guess is that language went in because it's probably in law now.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's my guess.
And, well,
that's
something I'm going to talk about with the research. It just concerned me,
sure,
because I just think that if you've got a school board in a small town,
sure,
lots of folks are related to each other.
And I'm fine with whatever we have now in law. My assumption was that's what it is right now, and they just...
Well, and it sounds like some folks who have a lot more knowledge than I do are all interested in that. And I think we're going to be interrupted here, and I'll allow that to happen so that Senator from the 9th can get to her desk, too.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Jefferson, what purpose do you seek?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Hearing no objection, Senator, proceed.
Thank you. Up over my right shoulder is my alma mater, Antonio Elementary School. They brought quite a big group up. There's four different groups that are going to be visiting throughout the day. This is the first of the four groups. I'd also like to recognize a good friend of mine that I went to high school with, Brian Wyman, whose daughter is in the fourth grade class. And I'd ask my fellow senators to make them feel welcome.
The guests of the Senator from Jefferson, please rise and the body make them feel welcome.
Proceed, Senators.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator, for continuing the inquiry.
I'm fine on that. Whatever the present law is, I'm fine.
Pardon me?
I'm fine on that. It's not a sticking point at
all.
I think whatever, if we just replicate the present law, if it's working now, that's fine. We just can find out.
We're talking over here to see kind of where we are now and what moving forward. And I think there's some other folks in the chamber who have knowledge of this. I know the senator from the 14th actually serves on a school board and can probably address that. And I can inquire of her and ask her that. The last thing that kind of jumped out at me that I wanted to bring up, and then I'll end the inquiry, is this prohibition of teachers participating in school board member campaigns.
Right.
What level of prohibition? They can't have... Where are you on that? They can't have a yard sign? They can't...
I think it says management of... Just a minute. Find that one.
And if it's management, or do we define management?
I'll find it and I'll read it to you.
I'm trying to pull it up myself.
No school district employees shall take part in the management of a campaign for the election.
No flash photography in the Senate while we're in session. Proceed, Senators.
Thank you. No school district employees shall take part in the management of a campaign for the election or defeat of members of the Board of Education by which he or she is employed. Actually, that's in another part of the election law, too, that's even stronger than that.
Oh, really?
In the election law. Uh-huh.
Do they define management?
And it says it as that they can't participate in a campaign, I think. 115, I can't remember the exact section of law, but they can't participate in a campaign for a board member or a ballot initiative, like if it's a...
like a bond or something?
Like what?
A bond or a levy for the school district?
Yes, that's okay. The way it is in the election.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Less than what that is.
Interestingly enough, we have a school board election in Kansas City today, and I voted on Friday absentee, and I mean, we have so few people running, I had a list of write-ins that I could choose from, and that was about the extent of it, but I know that in this chamber we've gone away, or we're starting to go away from prohibitions on political activity for different groups of people. I know the senator from a lot of counties in the Northwest has been trying to make sure that his firefighters in his area are still able to participate in political activity. I know that Kansas City Police Department has been pushing for years to lift the ban, because as they know it, they can't even have a bumper sticker on their private car or a yard sign in their yard. And so I didn't know if this was moving away from that trend of trying
actually,
to...
Actually, it's actually a lot softer than the present election
laws. Okay, okay. I didn't... And do you know if the election law, and I'll ask this question of someone over here later, defines management of a campaign?
No, it just says they can't... this is pretty darn close to what it is. They can't participate in a campaign of a candidate or a ballot initiative. It's not even management of it's anything at all.
Okay, so this actually lessens it a little bit. All right. Well, thank you, Senator. I'm going to ask, I'm going to inquire of one more senator, and then I'm going to offer an amendment on the consanguinity issue.
Sure.
Thank you, Senator. Mm-hmm. Mr. President?
We don't have three senators, but we've got a senator looking for recognition for introduction of guests, if you would allow
me. Would you like to recognize him?
I would do that. Senator from the second, what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. Seek unanimous consent to introduce a group of special guests.
Hearing no objection. Senator, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you for yielding, Senator, from the 10th. It is my esteemed honor to introduce in the upper gallery over my left shoulder to your front, Mr. President. I have a group of fifth graders from Weldon Springs, Missouri, from Messiah Lutheran School that are up here learning about state government. We just took a picture in the side gallery, which I'm sure they're all eagerly awaiting to pin up on their locker or in their room somewhere to commemorate this fantastic day to coming up to the state capitol. But if they would please rise, I'm sure the Missouri Senate would welcome them and say congratulations.
Yes, Senator, for the second, please rise and the body make them feel welcome. Senator from the 10th, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the Senator from Cape Girardeau?
Senator from Cape, Do you yield to the senator from the Senate, the 10th? He yields,
yield.
Senator. You may proceed.
Thanks, Senator. We just briefly spoke here on the floor, and I wanted to follow up with you.
Right.
You also had some concerns, it sounds like, on the fourth degree of consanguinity.
Right.
What the situation you describe is your brother is in administration. Is that correct?
My brother is an assistant principal at Cape Central High School. As I often say on the Senate floor and elsewhere, I have the worst thing a big brother can have, and that's a little brother that can beat him up. So he was a wrestling coach at Cape Central, and he's in administration. With all due respect to the senator from the 7th, and we've had this issue come up before in this body, and we've dealt with it in a constructive manner. Whether it's you have a parent that serves on a commission, or you have a relative that may be employed somewhere, the way that I believe you deal with it is you disclose and recuse yourself from that vote. And I think that's the appropriate way in which to move forward on all of this. If the senator from the 7th's particular provision dealing with that, in essence, the practicality would be, as long as my little brother was an assistant principal, I could never run for school board of Cape. Not saying, I'm not announcing for anything, but, you know, who knows where you want to go into the future. And I just think it's highly appropriate that when that situation comes forward, you disclose the conflict and you recuse yourself.
I think
so,
we've seen that happen before in the Senate successfully. The former senator from the 9th, her husband was on the Kansas City Board of Police Commissioners.
We even have it in Senate rules that you know, you basically avail yourself of the Senate rule, and then the Secretary of the Senate does not call your name during the vote. You know, otherwise, by Senate rule, if you're in the chamber, you have to vote. So you invoke the rule, and therefore, you are, in essence, recusing yourself. And the senator from the 9th, anytime we dealt with Kansas City Police retirement issues because of her spouse, she recused herself from that. And that's highly appropriate. It happens every day. It happens in my capacity serving on the Mosier's board. I've recused myself from things. It's happened, I'm sure, with other individuals on other boards that they may serve with.
Okay.
So I've got an amendment to, or I will have an amendment to do that. But you have the floor. I want to have a broader discussion first. When I first heard about this bill and I saw it going through the process, I thought we were just going to repeal tenure. Fine with repealing tenure. What I don't understand is all of this other stuff that seeks to put in state statute the micromanagement of a school district. So I may have an amendment that gets back to the fundamental issue of, are we going to repeal tenure or are we not going to repeal tenure too?
Okay, well, Senator, I just had a couple of questions about the bill that I've now had answered for me, and since you're going to offer an amendment relating to consanguinity, I'm going to sit down and let you begin your amending process. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Cape.
To inquire the senator from the 7th, please.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield to the senator from Cape?
I do, and I would
yield,
be happy
senator,
to
you
do
proceed.
That. Oh, thank you, sir.
Thank you, question.
Were you reading this? Because it may mean that already.
I'm sorry, probably know.
The language says the Board of Education shall not employ one of its members as a teacher, nor shall any person be employed as a teacher who is related within the fourth degree, whatever, and then it goes on, where the vote of the board member is necessary to the selection of the person.
Right, which means an administrator, because the board directly hires all administrators. The teachers are hired by the superintendent, offered and extended a contract, but anyone
that is outside of that, actually,
at least that's the practice in Cape Public Schools,
is that
the board directly votes on assistant principals, and anyone that works in the board office.
Actually, they vote on teachers, too.
Okay, well.
They vote on hiring and firing. Now, that's often recommended by the superintendent, but it's a board
I guess they
vote.
Do it. I've only seen it as slates. I haven't seen it as an individual, and maybe that's just how Cape Public School does it.
is they do it as a big slate and authorize the extending of contracts in April.
I think it depends on the board. When I was on a school board, we went through every single teacher, every single contract.
So I appreciate that. That's one aspect. But what I really wanted to focus my questions on is when I heard about, you know, the education bill and everything that we were going to, I thought this was just going to be the repeal of tenure. And then I read all this other stuff. So we repeal tenure and then all of the other stuff that's in your bill. And I guess I don't know why all the other stuff is so important to put in state statute and tell every local school district that this is how the world is going to operate.
Well,
what is the thought process? What was the committee? What is your thought process of why we repeal tenure, but then we put in place all these other prohibitions or rules, I guess?
I don't see them as prohibitions.
I corrected myself, rules.
Okay. I see them as letting the school districts know, because one thing I learned when I was on a school board, the legislature is the super school board. And so we...
The what? I'm sorry?
Super school board. The legislature is the super school board.
You think the General Assembly is the super school board?
It absolutely is, yes. That was one of the main things I learned when I took training as a school board member, that they taught us, that the legislature is the super school board.
I never once ran for mentioned that I wanted to be on the school board when I ran for state
well,
rep
most,
or state senate.
There is a lot of...
You're educating me.
Yeah, I mean, it was something that was important for me to know, because local control comes as the legislature grants that local control. Sometimes people get upset with some of the bills that we pass, but that is our responsibility. With that said, I think in answer to your question, the whole nation is looking at teacher quality right now, because teacher quality is the most important thing with regard to students' achievement. And so the whole...
I thought the parents' education level was the most predictive outcome of how a student was going to do.
It may be predictive, but actually moving a child forward is the teacher in the classroom.
The parents in the home structure has nothing to do with that?
I didn't say it didn't have anything to do with it. I said it's the most important. So what we're trying to do is make sure that we have really effective teachers in the classroom. For instance, LIFO that I mentioned, last in, first out. That is a law right now that says if there has to be a reduction in force in a school district, maybe because of finances or because the students are not there anymore and they lose population.
And is that repealed? In your bill?
Yes, it is. In other words,
okay, is that part of tenure or... Because I agree with
part
you.
Part of the whole process.
I would like to get rid of that, because as I think I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to offer an amendment that would allow for the repeal of tenure, but get rid of all this other stuff. And I think when I say all this other stuff, I tend to agree with you that it makes no sense to say... last in, first out, and not look at...
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Newton, what purpose to seek recognition?
I want to pardon myself for the senators in their debate. I'd ask for unanimous consent for an introduction, Mr. President.
Hearing no objection, Senator, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. From Newton County today, we have the 2012 participants of the Extension Legislative Day, and we have Dr. Jody Pennington, Jeremy Elliott Engel, Sheila Littlefield, Sherry Farmer, Debbie Seifert, and Nathaniel Petterman, Jacob Bogan, Jesse Schilling, Katie Littlefield, Madeline Liebler, and I ask the body to make them feel welcome as they look at government and process.
Would the guests of the senator please rise and the body make them feel welcome. Senator from Cape, you have the floor, I think.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could continue my inquiry with the senator from the 7th.
Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I'm sorry, before the introduction, I guess, we were talking about where this elimination of first in, first out on the I guess, elimination of employment is in the bill, because I don't want to get rid of that. I think it, I tend to agree with you that a just first in, first out, regardless of merit, regardless of position, regardless of curriculum taught, is not smart. And if it's in state statute that that is what must be done, then I think it should be that.
Yeah, what we're trying to do is give freedom to the districts to come up with an evaluation system, but let them know that that teacher effectiveness based on student achievement is our highest priority. You may have seen in the Wall Street Journal.
But where in state law does it say that a school district, when eliminating faculty, has to eliminate the first in first? Because if you're getting rid of that in state statute, much like you're getting rid of tenure, I want to get rid of that too.
I don't know exactly where it is.
Okay. Or is that union contracts like in the city of St. Louis?
I was just about to say, I know it's in union contracts.
Okay.
It may or may not be in statute, and I'm
right.
Sorry that I
and,
don't know.
And believe me, I am probably, as the senator from the 13th or the senator from the 11th, most anti-worker of anyone in the entire General Assembly. I think that's how they would say it. I'm just not pro-union. But if local school districts want to go ahead and do these collective bargaining districts and their school boards elect people that are on it and those elections are done on the local level, you know, I hear you that you believe the General Assembly is the ultimate school board. I just don't look at it that way. I kind of, you know, am like, hey, I'm not really keyed up on trying to micromanage all the school districts in the state of Missouri. Now, should we get rid of tenure? Absolutely. I'm with you 100%. But I really don't understand all these other parameters that we've got in here. So I don't know if you want to go one by one. I understand tenure. I understand the merits of repealing tenure. I don't need you to do that. But like I said, I'm getting ready to offer an amendment to take all the other stuff out if that gets drafted into us. So in the interim, I don't know if you want to do a good sell on each and every other thing you're doing in your bill other than the elimination of tenure. I apologize. I don't serve on your committee, and I'm not as up to speed on all the other stuff that you're trying to accomplish in here.
I do think value-added is very important. Because
where is that? What is value-added?
Value-added, like right now what we do is we take what people call a snapshot. And we have the MAP test tells us, okay, where are students in the fourth grade reading level right now? The country is going towards value added or growth of the student because that's a better measure of the teacher. In other words, what the child knew when they came into, let's just say I'm the teacher, into my classroom, and what they know when they finish 1 year in my classroom, so that you can tell if I helped advance those children in that classroom at least 1 year. At least 1 year, value added, that's the most effective measurement, because a teacher, in my opinion, should not be graded on a snapshot and then have a child, as the senator from Jackson said, I think the 10th, said, you know, you don't want, if you get a child 2 years behind and you take...
And right now, state law prevents local school districts from adopting that, or you're telling all local districts that they have to do that? Because I appreciate it, Senator, and I know your passion, but just because you think that's the way to go, I don't know that that should be how every district wants to go. And believe me, I would much rather have the individuals that we have on our local school boards in Southeast Missouri than the General Assembly saying, hey, we know better from Jefferson City. I've been to all of these conferences. I've seen it. So you shall do this regardless of what your experiences on the local level are. I think it cuts both ways. it, when liberals want to get up here and demand all of their protections, like tenure, I think that should go away. And that decision should be left to the local district. When more conservative minded individuals want to then foist what they believe is the right thing to do, I think that should go away as well. So I'm kind of more faithful with local control, knowing fully well that the individual that's mayor right now in my hometown, I didn't vote for. I don't even really particularly like, but it is what it is. And we live with that. Whereas there are a plethora of people, particularly the ones that own newspapers in my neck of the woods, that can't stand the fact that I've been in the General Assembly for 12 years. But it is what it is. They don't get to determine who serves up here any more than one other particular individual that does. That's what makes our system so great and unique. And it's a strength, regardless of whether or not 100% of what we agree with gets done. Thanks. So I'm just trying to get a better feel for your legislation.
Sure.
If,
and
you
I
know,
understand that.
You're now saying, hey, out of everything that I've done, local school districts, this is what I think you should do. Or if your bill basically says you may do all of this, and maybe that's a better way. I don't know. Is your bill tell all local school districts that they shall do this?
No, it really gives a lot of flexibility to districts to come up to have teachers and parents.
Well, but I'm just flipping through, and I'm sorry to cut you off. On page 5 of the Senate Committee Substitute, section 168.1003, and this is just the first shall that I saw, each school district shall initially place a teacher who is contracted to begin initial employment in the district on or after July 1, 2013, on a one-year contract.
That's pretty much what we do now with new teachers. They go year to year until they've been there 5 years.
Yeah, but a teacher who has received 2 successive annual evaluations of ineffective shall not be reemployed.
Right.
That completely takes the decision on reemployment out of the local school district and says us in the General Assembly that have never met that teacher, that have no idea what is going on, that our judgment over that is more effective. And in practicality, I would be fearful that we would never get any constructive criticism or ineffective ratings of teachers.
3 senators on the floor. Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, seek unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest, if I can break the...
Hearing no objection. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you. Mr. President, on my right and your left, I would like to introduce to the chamber Dr. Cheryl Schrader. Please stand up. She is a new chancellor of the University of Missouri Science and Technology in Rolla, Missouri, just freshly on the job, and we're excited to have her and like everyone to make her feel welcome.
Would the body please welcome the guest of the Senator from Phelps.
Hey, keep it simple.
Senator, senators proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator, could I answer one of your questions first that you asked me and I didn't have it?
As long as the President lets us continue our inquiry.
Right, I thought he said so.
Thank you. Yeah, Senator,
IFO
please.
Is in statute
yes,
now.
Yes, please.
Yes, it is. And if you have your bill, it's on page 27.
Page 27?
Starting on line 10, going through 26. So, yes, it is in statute now.
I'm sorry. I'm now on page 27 in the Senate Committee Substitute. And what are you repealing?
Down
or
the,
what
no,
line?
I'm not repealing. You asked me if LIFO was in statute now, and
okay.
We had to fire the last in, first out.
Okay.
There was reduction in force. We do have to now under the law, and that's where it is.
Okay. What lines? I'm sorry.
Page
27, lines what?
Lines 10 through 26.
Okay. Permanent teachers shall be retained on the basis of performance based evaluations
and
seniority. However, seniority shall not be controlling within the field of specialization. Okay? I don't know that that says last in, first out.
Okay.
I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, I think that just, okay. I am actually getting an amendment that is distributed. I don't know as we're moving forward if you want me to offer that amendment, and then we can maybe amend the amendment to try to keep what you want to keep in here above and beyond tenure. But that's kind of the dialogue. I'm trying to get a better understanding of the value from your position on, you know, like I said, repeal a tenure, I'm with you. Because I think that is a dictate from Jefferson City that tells a local school district what it shall do. So I want to empower the local school district. I don't want the local school district just to say, well, the state says they got to have tenure, so they got to have tenure. But I also then don't want the state to substitute in its place for local control all these other dictates. And I just want to make sure that I'm correct in my first blush that these are more controls for governance, and that in essence this bill is passing board policy that I don't really want to get into on the job, in my opinion. In the will of the body will work out, but
On the LIFO thing, it is a mandate right now, and I would loosen that up for districts. The mandate now says on page 27, if you look at line 13, permanent teachers shall be reinstated positions from which they have been given leaves of absence. So it doesn't leave the districts the flexibility of hiring the teachers that they want. It does require it. And the 2 years of ineffective teachers, I wanted to go back because it's hard to get a word in edgewise with you, Senator. I want to go back to another question that you brought up
sure.
that I didn't get to answer. With sure. regard to 2 years of the ineffective teachers, that's actually determined by the local school board, not us. The school board sets the evaluation process, and they alone, not the legislature, determine if that teacher is effective or not. But if they've got a teacher or a principal for that matter, because administrators are in there too, but mainly in the teacher situation here, if they have a teacher that for 2 years in a row, by their own determination, have been ineffective in the classroom, then they do let that teacher go. But they determine that, not the legislature.
Senator?
Because what the studies have shown, if a student has two ineffective teachers in a row for 2 years, they've really pretty much lost their opportunity for success.
Okay. And I appreciate where you're at, but the point I'm making is, in the practicality, in the real world, I don't think you'll ever see another ineffective evaluation again from any administrator. Okay? And I'm just going to tell you, when you say, if I as an administrator give two ineffective evaluations of a teacher, that administrator is no longer going to give the ineffective evaluations. Because they lose then all discretion because of the state policy that you put in. It may be very well that once we repeal tenure, that you get one ineffective evaluation as a teacher, and it's big enough and it's bad enough that then that teacher is terminated. It's still a local control decision.
I think it gives them this. When I was on a school board, I ran on this issue because...
Three senators on the floor. Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Speaking in, Ms. Consent to introduction of special guests.
Hearing no objection, Senator, proceed.
First, I'd like to introduce Dr. Matt Casey. Dr. Casey is a doctor of the day. He's from Creve Coeur. He works at St. John's in my district. And I also would like to introduce three family practitioners, two from my district, one from nearby here. Dr. Cantor, Dr. Yadiva, and Dr. Conley, if the body would please make them welcome.
The guests of the Senator from the 24th, please rise, and the body make them feel welcome. Senator from Cape, Senator from the 7th, you proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I may continue my inquiry with the Senator from the 7th.
Proceed.
Thank you.
I forgot.
Senator, I'm sorry, you were cut off.
I'm sorry, that totally interrupted my thought process. Do you remember
what
I was saying?
Well, what you were saying is you believe that if a student gets two ineffective teachers in a row,
right,
the ability of that student to learn is irreparably damaged, and that you feel that it is a local decision, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I believe you were saying it is a local decision of whether or not that administrator gives an ineffective assistance evaluation or ineffective evaluation to a teacher, and then if there's two successive, then that school district has no alternative but to terminate the teacher, even if the school board, in spite of the ineffective rating, still thinks that that's a contributing teacher, but that it was constructive in nature to either get the teacher to get more professional development, get the teacher to reprioritize his or her life. You know, this is what my brother does for a living. Okay? He doesn't serve on the school board. He doesn't look from afar. He actually goes into classrooms. He is more right-wing radical nut than I am, but he actually goes in, and this is what he does for a living. And there are times that he will give ineffective ratings to teachers as a way in which to constructively put them on a path. But as I visit with him, his fear is that if he knows, if I do this twice, I'm firing that person, that he will lose the ability to have this evaluation process because he may think they were ineffective on a particular aspect of the evaluation, but he does not think that it's dischargeable. So you're putting him in an untenable position to where he doesn't think the teacher should lose their job, but he also thinks that there's one particular aspect of the evaluation that the teacher was ineffective on that needs improvement, that needs to be documented. That's the only point I'm trying to make,
okay,
Senator.
Okay, this is, let me kind of flip that coin a little bit. But first of all, I just want to start on amendment to yours in case your amendment passes.
Well, I'm distributing it, so you're
okay,
more than
because I think your amendment does take out LIFO, which we both agree we want to.
Okay,
repeal.
Perfect.
So 168-291. Hope you're listening over there at the table.
Yeah, I hope you look at that, and if there's, because I think what I did is I took out all of the brackets that you had at the back of the bill as well. Is that what we did? Did we take out all the brackets at the back of the bill as well to go back to current law? No, we did not take out all of the brackets at the back of the bill. So basically, all of the brackets at the back of the bill are still brackets if my amendment is adopted. So I don't know if you and Kit want to double-check that, or Kit can talk to Michael, or because I agree. I'm going to move for the adoption of this amendment. I did not draft the amendment. I am going to represent that it basically keeps the repeal of tenure but gets rid of all the other stuff.
Oh, okay. But you agree, though, that you want the LIFO in there.
And that's what I think we do.
I don't think you do. Let's
okay.
see.
Kit and Michael are talking, so.
Oh, okay. So if you remove LIFO, and since we both want it in, it's at 168-291, and it says, whenever it is necessary to decrease the number of employees because of insufficient funds or decrease in pupil enrollment or lack of work, the Board of Education may cause the necessary number of employees, beginning with those serving probationary periods, that's a new teacher, to be placed on leave of absence without pay, And the law now says, but only in the inverse order of their appointment. Each employee placed on leave of absence shall be reinstated in the inverse order of his placement on leave of absence. And I think you want it the way I've written it.
I agree. I agree with you. I view that as micromanagement from Jefferson City that says you have to give tenure, just like, hey, we're taking the discretion from the school board away to be able to pick the best and brightest if you have to downsize. Senator, I'm with you 100%.
Okay,
I agree with you, and it is not my intention to do away with that if that's contained in your bill.
Okay.
And that's why I'm hopeful that this dialogue is constructive to the other members so that we can see our thought processes and what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay, so right now I think that research is probably drafting an amendment to your amendment to put back in the LIFO reform that we both agree we want to keep.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. That means good.
Okay, and then back to your question with regard to, I see this entire bill as giving tools to a school district. I used to be on a school board, and the school district, well, before I was on the school board, the school district had an independent audit of the school district to find out where we were weak. And one of the main areas that we were weak was that we kept struggling teachers. We kept ineffective teachers, and we did not let them go. Well, as you know, and I'm sure you've talked to your brother, it is a huge process to go through that. So we sort of keep them there, and nationally they've called it the dance of the lemons, and you move the lemons around from one school to the other, and the principal doesn't have any say in it. So in this case, we allow principals, because right now principals don't have a say. I don't think that's in law. I think those are in teacher contracts. So it would allow principals like your brother to actually have a say in what teachers, because he's going to be evaluated on how good his school does. So I see this as giving a, just a minute. Okay, I just got a note that your amendment is okay. You leave our correction of LIFO in. Okay, so we're okay on that one. Good, you did a
rock
good job.
Star, good.
All right, but
see,
let's go back to this.
Senator, this is great.
Yeah, if the thing is, so what happened in my school district, like school districts all over the country, is those teachers stayed just because it was so expensive and so time-consuming and so taking so much energy to let them go. So what this is, it gives a tool to these principals, and it says, you, if you determine of your own evaluation system, whatever you decide it's going to be, if you determine that they've been ineffective, then you let them go. I will tell you what, superintendents and administrators would be so grateful for this, because, you know, then they don't have to.
But Senator, I appreciate that. Once we get rid of tenure, that's possible now anyway.
Yeah, but what you're saying,
I'm just telling you, as a relative to somebody that does this day in and day out, they will not give the ineffective rating until they know that it's a fireable offense. And then that stops the ability of having constructive criticism for improvement. And I appreciate where you're at, but I'm telling you, if we get rid of tenure, those bad teachers can go away, and they will go away. They may not go away through state mandate, and it may be highly appropriate that's okay. And I think it's okay, because I don't want Jefferson City to be the hirer and firer of every school teacher in the state of Missouri. We don't need to be in that business. And I know the frustrations that you have seen out of a lifetime dedicated to improving the educational process. But with all due respect, the General Assembly is not a superintendent, and we don't need to micromanage it.
Well,
if we do, then we should run for superintendent.
I think there's a bill to do that, have superintendents run for office. Anyway, Senator, I hear what you're saying.
I'm just going to move for the adoption of the amendment, and we can go over all the other provisions that are in there, and I want to make sure that it does what I say it does. So I hope everyone looks at it closely, because I do not mean to misrepresent to anyone, but I'm going to offer this amendment. It is my intention to basically repeal tenure and get rid of everything else that is bold in your bill, but also then get rid of all the open bracket, close brackets that you have, or keep all of the open bracket, close brackets that you have at the back of the bill. And I hope individuals will amend the amendment accordingly, and we can have a broader discussion of where we go. But I...
This is called trust research.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Did you get on a word processor and type your bill?
I think, Senator, I mean, you and I have served together for 12 years.
And absolutely.
In many ways, think a lot alike on these kind of education reform issues. And I am not in any way against what you're saying. I support what you're doing. I just would put a little bit more meat on it, but I am okay with what you're doing. And just, we will move forward.
I think
if we're
districts. And I appreciate that, Senator, and I really do. And I don't want the pursuit of perfection to be the enemy of the good. In all candidness, what I hope we can get to is we can get to a clear, delineated public policy choice for this Senate. Do you want to repeal tenure or do you want to keep tenure? And then we just lock in and we stay on that debate until we come to a vote on it.
And
with all due respect, I think with all the other stuff, we're not going to get to that isolated up or down, either you're for tenure or you're against tenure.
Could we just state this a little bit different way?
Okay.
I think it's a teacher quality bill, a teacher effectiveness bill, and what we want to be able to do is board teachers who are really knocking themselves out and raising student achievement. So I see this as a positive.
I appreciate all of that, but I really don't want to get, because if we really gave a rip about teachers, we wouldn't be cutting education funding to the degree we are. Senator, Southeast Missouri State University is the teacher educator of the region, all right? More teachers are created out of Southeast and do a wonderful job, from early childhood to special disabilities to Down syndrome kids. Senator, I talk to the graduates that I represent now because I believe I represent them, even though they're from all four corners of the state of Missouri that come to Cape Girardeau to get a teacher's degree in education. I talk to them now, and tuition is so high, the pay is so low to be a teacher, they can't qualify for a car loan, let alone a home, let alone move ahead on anything else. And, you know, I agree because I have this conversation with my brother all the time. It is hard, very hard to justify a 12-month salary to somebody that only works 181 days a year. And I'm the first one to say that. All right? Teachers work 180-plus days a year. All right? It's very hard to then hold out and say, well, I should have a salary to somebody that works 365 days a year. All right? So I agree, and I don't want to go too overboard, but we get what we pay for in our teachers as well. And I think, you know, just saying we're going to make it more rigorous to become a teacher in the state of Missouri is not necessarily going to get the result that we all want. And that's just my opinion. And I appreciate your inquiry. Mr. President?
Senator from Cape.
I have an amendment. It has been distributed. I request a waiver of the reading.
Send amendment forward.
I am sending
reading
the amendment
will be, hearing
forward.
No objection. The reading will be a waived. Be waived. Senator from Cape.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the amendment. I appreciate the inquiry of the senator from the 7th. I appreciate all of her years of dedication in education reform. What my amendment seeks to do, and I represent to the Senate, this is my understanding of what it does. And I'm willing to be educated and stood corrected because I did not draft this. I'm trusting that that's what we do in the interest of full disclosure. I want everyone to look at it and verify for themselves. What my intention is to morph.
Senator,
yes.
Could I interrupt you just
yes.
a second? We have a senator looking to introduce special guests. And all right, you want Senator from the 11th? You want to introduce Senator from the 11th?
I would seek unanimous consent to introduce special guests. I apologize for the interruption.
Hearing no objection, Senator, proceed.
Yeah, Mr. President, in the upper gallery, we're joined today by Stevens College Children's School and their teacher, Lindsay Clifton from Columbia, Missouri. And they are joined by our able Minority Caucus legal staff. Thomas Chappie is among them today. So I'd ask that the body make them feel welcome.
Would the guests of Senator the 11th please rise and the body make them feel welcome. Senator from Jefferson.
No, no. Thank you, Mr. President. Unanimous consent to also introduce special guest.
Hearing no objections, Senator, proceed.
Behind me, we have the second installment of Antonio Elementary. They're here again. This was one of, I guess, the 12 alma maters I had from kindergarten to high school. I'd like the Senate to please make them feel welcome.
Could the guests of Senator from Jefferson please rise? And the body make them feel welcome. Special guest. Senator from St. Francis.
Move, and then I would like to be recognized.
The Senate.
I don't think he's moved.
Senator from 7th, do you have what purpose you seek, Ray?
I was going to ask that we lay the bill over and give us some time to put together a substitute. One other senator thinks that we just deleted the whole bill, but I think if we just, you know, lay it over right now and let us really look at it, that would be a better idea. So I ask that it be laid over.
The bill would be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from St. Francis.
Could I inquire the senator from the 7th?
Senator from the 7th, do you yield? She yields, Senator. You may
I
proceed.
Know you've already laid it over, but since I've got not a long memory and I've already prepared some questions, I wanted to ask you a couple things because there were some things in there. I understand what the senator from Cape is doing, but I wanted to ask you on a couple of things here. On your Senate substitute, I guess on page 12, it's down here, it says, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education must develop standards. Is this the same group that yesterday you said was incompetent?
Just a minute, let me find it. Where are you, what line?
I'm on the description, the summary. It's the summary.
What's the section that it's on? I just want to find it so I can know what.
Teacher evaluations.
No, oh, I mean, what number section, like 168 point whatever?
I don't know. It's in your bill summary. Your,
okay, 168.
It's at the bottom of the summary.
Okay.
Because if you're going to resubmit this.
I'm not
this,
seeing where you are.
All right, does your bill give
know,
the Department
mean,
of Elementary and Secondary, is this your bill?
Yes, it is, but I'm looking at the actual language because I
okay.
want to make sure I'm well, answering you absolutely correctly, and the summary is never perfect, as we know. If you could just give me the section, I'll read it.
Sorry, the summary does not say the section. I'm just using the summary of the bill. So do you know if the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education must develop standards for the implementation of local evaluation systems?
This section says no school district employee shall take part in the management of a campaign.
All right. Well, thank you for the
inquiry.
I'm sorry,
I can't find where you are.
Mr. President.
Senator from St. Francis.
I'm going to speak on the bill that was just withdrawn or put on the informal because the sponsor doesn't know what's in it. So,
Senator, I think it may be more appropriate to make those statements on.
Mr. President, could I inquire the senator from Jefferson?
You can ask for a point of personal privilege.
No, could I inquire the senator from Jefferson so that I can?
I yield.
Whoa, Senator Jefferson, do you yield? He yields. Senator,
I yield.
Thank you. I don't want to. But this.
You wanted to talk about this now while it was still fresh
no,
on your mind.
Because I don't know what committee this went through, but we're going to let the Department of Elementary and Secondary secondary education, the one that was described yesterday, is incompetent and everything, come up with these rules and regulations. I mean, I've got a lot of problems with the, I don't know how it got out of committee, but if we're gonna discuss this now or in the future once this is revised, I think we got to figure out what we're doing. We're going to say the Department of Elementary and DESE is going to make all these rules to evaluate these teachers.
In fairness to the senator from the 7th, in her whole summary, it's got the section where it's at in the bill. Uh-huh. The area that you were wanting to talk about was the only part of the summary that didn't reference a section.
Right. That was my fault that I couldn't reference it. But it said maybe the bill didn't have it in there, but it says that's who's going to come up with these rules and regulations. We've already said they're incompetent. And so I don't know why you'd want them to come up with them. And then I don't know how you're going to evaluate.
You don't mean me.
Well, I don't mean you, but right. How would you do that? Because then I see amendments to.
Well, I think you're going to have an opportunity to talk about this. The bill's been withdrawn. You're going to draft a new substitute that I would imagine would take into account.
I probably won't get the opportunity to talk on this. I mean, I guess I can inquire people to talk about this. But if this bill comes to the floor and I looked at the bill before and come up with how does this, because the senator from Cape is going to take it and only make one provision, strip everything out of there except this,
right.
And then we're going to have a debate on that.
Well, his amendment needed to be redrafted too, because what he did is he took all the new language out, and in everything on about page 17 to the end of the bill was all bracketed out, and that all stayed in. So in essence, all that's eliminated. So we basically have a bill with nothing in it.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. But even with that, though, even if we get it down to just tenure.
Right, which I think is what the goal of the senator from Cape,
I think we
Girardeau.
Should have some discussions on tenure, because I think that we probably should revise tenure. I'm not with the teachers' unions and saying we shouldn't look at tenure, but I don't know if we should just get a rid of it completely.
They talked about, I know this isn't a debate that people want to hear right now, but they talked about the 2 years of ineffective teachers. My sister's a teacher in the Fox School District. She's a librarian now. She was at an elementary school, Clyde Hamrick. It had the highest free and reduced lunch. Her students, it was challenging on MAP testing. She goes to another school district that is a very good school district as far as the MAP test scores. She went from just an average teacher to a really good teacher just moving to a different school.
You know, I coached a lot, Senator. Uh-huh. I coached a lot of sports, basketball. When I had really good players.
You were a great coach.
I was a great coach. I mean, unbelievable.
Frank Haith was a great coach until the first round of March Madness.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. But we've got several things here. But we just have to look, because I don't want to get a situation if we're going to talk about just getting rid of tenure. You may have a teacher in Cape Girardeau that's connected to a senator that the school board might not like. He may do something the school board doesn't like, and he may be fired for that. And we want to.
Well,
make sure
if that's the case, I don't think they would hire the senator from Cape Girardeau's brother as an administrator.
Well, you would hope, but I think there are other places that that people. So there is probably some procedures, but there's no reason, like in North County School District, that you should have to hire a specialized attorney to defend you when you've had a teacher on record, besides other problems, falling asleep in the classroom 3 times, and it cost them $45,000 to get it. So there has to be some. We have to do something with tenure, but throwing it out.
I think I don't want to put words in the senator from Cape Girardeau's mouth, but I think what his goal is to do away with all this other stuff,
right?
So it doesn't detract away from what the real issue is going to be on this bill and its tenure. I may disagree with you on tenure on some points, what the root of this bill. That's what I think he wants the root of this bill to be at the end. Let's get to the core of this bill and debate that issue.
Well, I think we should, because a lot of these other issues that were in that version that we studied, or some of us that read and studied and looked at, shouldn't necessarily be the focus today. And if it is tenure, and we're just going to completely eliminate it, I'm not prepared to make that vote. So I don't know if I'm with you or against you, but right. I think that we need to evaluate it, maybe make some provisions in there.
I would love if I want this bill to die. I think if I wanted this bill to die, I'd like to spend a lot of time on the consiguity and the affinity section where you can't hire somebody that's within the fourth degree. I probably said that wrong.
Well,
or the part that limits the First Amendment rights. And by leaving that all in there, maybe I would like this bill to die, so I'd like it all to stay in. But I think what the senator from Cape is saying, if we take all that stuff out, we don't have to spend time on the floor debating issues like taking away someone's First Amendment rights.
You on this committee?
No, it actually went through general laws, I believe. I was on that committee until last year.
Well, my point is, if we're going to talk about merit pay, which is what this is, if we're going to talk about these things, we need to vet them. So we don't need to just offer amendments that's going to freeze superintendents' salaries and then filibuster it. We need to have this situation the Senator for Capes talked about vetted on the floor, and let's decide if we're going to do something about it. Then if we want to vet merit pay, let's do that and let's talk about it. But let's do these situations separately rather than lumping them all together.
I think that's what his goal is, and that's why it takes me a while to follow him, because he's always two steps ahead of me and a step ahead of everybody else. So,
well, I appreciate you talking, because I just had several issues in the current bill that I don't think we're going to see anymore. But I wish we, before we come back with another proposal on merit pay, that if we're going to make the determination that DESE is incompetent, that we don't put them in a position to set up merit pay.
I got
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator from the 23rd. Oh, Senator from Lawrence, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I request unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Hearing no objection, Senator, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. To your left and our right on the couch on the side, we have some 4-H students up visiting the Capitol today. From Noel, Missouri, we have Shelby Bishop and Abby Bishop. From Pineville, Tasha Sherman and Hannah Sherman. From Purdy, Megan Thomas. From Exeter, Noah Tucker. From Rocky Comfort, Joe Stevens. And from Goodman, a town with an excellently strong name, Jeremy Elliott Engel. Thank you. I'd like the body to make them feel welcome.
Would the guests of the Senator from Lawrence please rise, and the body make them feel welcome. Senator from the 23rd.
Without objection, the Senate will stay on that calendar. Ask you to recognize the Senator from Buchanan on Senate Bill 727.
On the informal calendar, Senate Bill 727, Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 727 be taken from the informal calendar for perfection.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from Buchanan. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I renew my motion for the adoption of the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 727.
Whoa, Senator. All right, the Senate substitute has already been adopted. The Senator from Phelps had the floor on the perfection motion. Senator Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was inquiring of Senator Schaaf, Senator from the Cannon.
Senator, we don't refer to our colleagues with their names.
Understood.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield to Senator from Phelps? Senator, do you yield?
Okay. I didn't
he
hear
yields, Senator. You may proceed.
I think you were in the process of explaining to me what you were actually trying to do here and the benefits.
Yes. Basically, what I'm trying to do is to, through a sort of a demonstration project, determine whether or not a significant number of people will be able to graduate from the welfare program of child care by giving them an opportunity to stay on the program and pay a premium. And as their income increases, the premium would increase such that they'd eventually graduate off the program. The idea is to save money. And hopefully the premium that would be collected from their increased wages would pay for the cost of the program. If it works, then it could be expanded to the whole state, get people off of poverty, and and save a lot of money for the state. That's what it does.
Okay, I know during their discussion last time when this bill was up, it was brought up as to why the department could not do this as a departmental rule or set up and do this experiment, which is basically what you're doing.
Right, it's because the rules of the program are defined by statute, and so it would require this change in the statute in order to do the program.
And we do have to put an FTE in order to get this bill funded, correctly?
The department believes that that they would need one. They originally thought that it would take two, but they decided that they think one, and I believe I should be able to get something into the budget to take care of that. It is subject to appropriations, so if I can't do it, well, the program's dead. And I don't intend to sponsor a program that's going to ultimately cost money. The object here is just to simply determine whether we can save a lot of money in future years.
As I told you last time, my big concern about this legislation, I think the experiment would be a good idea. Hopefully it would be effective. But my concern is, how do you actually administer this program on a statewide basis? In other words, I can understand how it would work on a small basis. It'd be pretty easy to keep track of what's going on. But on a statewide or a large-scale basis, it looks to me like we're setting up another huge bureaucracy within a huge bureaucracy, and that concerns me. In other words, are we getting money to where it's intended to be used, or are we, in fact, putting another level of spending that no one gets any benefit from except the people administering the program, quite frankly?
Well, the answer is that if the pilot program shows that the savings exceeds the cost significantly, then we could expand it. If the program shows that it doesn't, then we will never go to the statewide program. Because I don't really want to, I'm like you, I don't want to create a program that would cost the state more money.
A program within a program, yeah. Because we've got enough of that already.
Yes, we do.
And I think as we go through the budget, as we're trying to balance the budget, as we're trying to do best for constituents in the state of Missouri, we find that a lot of the money tends to be wasted in the mid-level and upper-level bureaucracy, and I think social programs are not immune from that at all. And so that's a big concern that I have. You think you've got safeguards built in. I think subject to appropriation is the key that we have to keep in mind, that we've got to keep that in place, or this thing could get out of control. We don't want it to take life of its own, so to speak, and that I don't want to see happen, and hopefully you do not either.
I don't. Thank you.
Thank you for your inquiry.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise? Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Senator,
do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I do appreciate this bill. I heard it in committee. It's a problem that government has created for itself, and I think clearly it enslaves people in these welfare programs. And the whole idea that, I mean, you hear from the individuals that are stuck in these programs that, you know, that creates a disincentive for them to move forward and to get a higher paying job and to take on more hours. So I really appreciate you bringing the bill forward. And then my understanding is you've narrowed it down in such a small scale that then there's not necessarily required an FTE to fund the program. And I would hope that this program will become successful, and then you'll bring it back to this floor. Well, you'll try to, you know, further advance the program to a broader scale. And I think at that time, I hope you would consider the idea, and I know this isn't how we work down here, but the idea that we would create laws and we would tell departments to do things, and we might actually say that do this without hiring anybody else. Because the way that the private sector works, there's not one single private sector employee that would tell you that they do the same amount of work, they have the same level of productivity today as just 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So in the private sector, when the people that we work for, they describe our job and they say, well, here's 100% of your duties, but guess what? I need you to do 10% more or 20% more or 30% more for the same pay or within the same job description. I think we need to change how we ask our agencies to perform their duties in such a way that we say, here's what you need to do. This is our program. Administer the program with the resources you have and figure out a way to do that. That's the difference I see so far, the difference I see with how we employ our government agency employees and how the private sector works. The private sector demands more productivity day in, day out. And every time we stand up here and we create a program, and a good program like this, and then you send it to fiscal oversight and they say, well, it's going to be one FTE or two FTEs. Every single quarter that goes by, my staff are given more responsibilities, more job. Their job description grows and grows and grows. And they don't look at me and say, well, you're going to need to hire 20% more of us. Otherwise, we can't do what you asked us to do. So I applaud you for the bill. I know this program will be successful. I think it's a fantastic thing for the community of people that are stuck in these programs. But I think when it comes back, let's mandate this happens and let's maybe figure out a way to say in law, do this with the people you have. And I think the more often that we do that, if that's how you get greater productivity out of anything, we certainly need to get more productivity out of government. So thank you for this bill.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator from Buchanan, you are recognized to close.
Close.
The Senator from Buchanan moves the adoption of the Senate substitute. All those in favor? I'm sorry, we are perfecting the bill. We have already adopted the Senate substitute. The Senator from Buchanan renews this motion that Senate Bill number 727 be declared perfected and ordered printed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the formal calendar.
Senate bills for perfection, the formal calendar. Senate Joint Resolution 25, the Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Mr. President, could you please put that on the informal calendar?
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Moving down that calendar, Senate bills for perfection, Senate bills 588 and Senate bills 585, the Senator from the 15th. Senator from the 15th, Sergeant at Arms. Would you please summon the Senator from the 15th? Senate bills for perfection, Senate bills 588 and 585, Senator from the 15th. On the calendar, Senate bills for perfection, Senate bills 588 and 585. Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask that Senate Bill 588 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now ask that Senate Bill 588 be declared perfected and ordered printed. For the benefit of the members of the chamber here, this is the incentive actually uniquely being discussed after the day after the national championship, to bring more sporting events to Missouri. The impact, obviously, as everyone is aware, as we've discussed this before, is tremendous. And the tens of millions of dollars that have been brought into the state over the last 20 years by these events are real dollars and dollars that we spend on essential services here in Missouri. The attendance at these events, whether it's the women's Final Four, the men's Final Four, the U.S. skating, figure skating championships, the Midwest regionals, the Frozen Fours, the wrestling championships, that impact is significant. And the reality is, and the revenue that's generated is significant as well. The reality, though, is that that climate has changed. All of the bidding for all of these kinds of events taking place over the next year take you out 4 to 5 years. So it's really a critical time for us to be able to compete. And last year, we had this bill, and it was based on a formula that DED would create that took into account the impact zone of these events. And we had that discussion here out on the floor. And through the deliberative process that we have here in the Senate, I think we came up with a bill that's better, one that's based on and measuring the impact based on tickets sold. And so you actually have a measure for how many people are at these events, and the $5 per ticket credit that is in this bill assumes that $117 is spent throughout a weekend, whether it's hotel rooms, whether it's food, whether it's beverage, whether it's clothing, whatever it is. It's an easy, common sense assumption to make. So we tried to bring this back to more of a realistic perspective on what a fan would actually spend, not the modeling and that approach that we had last year. It allows us to compete. It allows us to take into account how many people would be at that event for that bid, for the bid to land that. And it isn't just the NCAA events. It's the AAU championships. It's the Ohio Valley Conference. It's a Little League event. Whatever is in that bill that we have as an organizing committee that is recognized to host these events that are competitively bid, events that we do not have now, events that we will not get, that we bring that revenue into the state and allows us to compete. We have a discussion about incentives and tax credits, and all that's fair. I believe that we ought to have reform, but the reality is none of them are inherently good and none of them are inherently bad. I think you got to take a look at the merits of each one of them. This one is soundly based on actually what people will spend and the revenue that's generated for this state, and something that I think we need to move forward on. And with that, Mr. President, I would ask to inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator, before we do that, would you move for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute?
I would move for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute. Thank you.
The senator from the 15th has moved the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard on that? And, Senator, you would like to inquire, is that right?
Senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I wanted to inquire of you briefly, because you've obviously played a role in helping put together what this bill looks like right now, including the contribution credit that's in here. And I didn't mention the cap of this bill is $3 million, but you have the contribution credit as well. That would seem to be a way for these sorts of not-for-profits to help generate revenue to help host these events.
Yeah,
so I wanted to get your take.
The contribution credit program is one that really I think we should more broadly expand to really any organization that wants to apply for it. And just for the benefit of the body, that's essentially where an organization buys Missouri state tax credits from the state, such that it's completely revenue neutral to the state. And then it, what it does, it makes those credits available to donors. And what, essentially what you're doing is you're redirecting federal tax dollars to the state of Missouri. So it's, when we talk about that specific program, that's the one taxpayer program I think we should authorize $1 trillion of authorization, because that doesn't impact state government at all. Just to walk through the process, the agency goes to their donor and asks them for a donation. They give them a tax credit that's half the value of the donation. They take the 100%, say $100, so they take the $100 from the donor, and then they take $50 of the $100 and give it back to the state. So that transfer is totally revenue neutral to the state, and what the donor's doing is the donor is avoiding federal taxes as well as capital gains tax. So it's incentive for a donor to make that donation, and the state is indifferent financially. Now, Earl, you talked before about how this bill, when it first came out last year, it had all these kind of impact studies around it, and I have no faith and confidence in how, in any impact study, in the study of economics, there's a phrase we use all the time, which is, all things being equal, we'll assume this. And what that means is we don't know what we don't know, so we're going to assume that certain things and then go forward with our analysis. All the ways that we try to measure the effectiveness of our taxpayer programs, I don't trust the results in any way, shape, or form. What I really sought out last year with this bill, and you provided, was just a simple, easy to understand program. What's the concept? We're going to give $5 a ticket. What has to happen for the person that buys that ticket to get to the point where the state breaks even? I'm going to ignore all the multiplier effects. I'm going to ignore the fact that you have an empty stadium and you fill it and create economic activity. I'll ignore the people that work at the facility. I'll ignore people that work at the hotels that are that much more full. I'll ignore all the people that work at gas stations that people drive on their way. I'll ignore people flying into the state and having that much more revenue go into the airport or concessions. There's so many other ways that the multiplier effect could occur, but I just want to, what I'm going to do is assume, I'm not going to count any of that. I don't want to consider any of that. Tell me what that person that goes to, in June, St. Louis is hosting the Visa National Gymnastics Championship, and that's where, that's one of the next steps towards picking our Olympic gymnast this year. There's actually a St. Louis and Sarah Finnegan that she won a big competition in Italy, but when we bring that event to Missouri and we fill up that facility, in that case, you'll have gymnasts from all around the country and their families and their coaches. I want to know, the person that buys a ticket to that event, what kind of economic activity do they themselves have to engage in such that the $5 credit goes back to the state? And so you've given some examples, and it's about $115 of economic activity that the person has to engage in, at which point, with certainty, the state will break even on the credit. And then all the other things that occur, we're going to ignore, but we know that they're a net positive, not a net negative to the state. I personally would like to see every single tax credit program we have meet this standard. The standard, just common sense proof. If a tax credit exists, what has to happen that wouldn't otherwise happen such that the state recovers the tax credit? And I think in this case, the likelihood of that occurring is very high, if nothing's certain, but it's very high. And if we're off, if the state only recovers $4 instead of $5, one can speak to all the other types of economic activity that we absolutely know take place that we're ignoring. In my thought is, just show me where I get $5 back. What does that person that buys a ticket have to do for me to get $5 back? And I think that's the way to have this program be structured. And I think that if we held all the other tax credit programs to the same standard of proof, I think we'd have a lot less tax credit programs, because I think that it'd be harder to prove in other cases that the state gets back, in this case, that $5.
If you look at a lot of these events where 90%+ of the folks are coming really from outside of the state, and outside of those particular regions, in a hotel room, conceivably could cost you $100 for one night. It really doesn't take much of a leap to assume that people are spending that kind of money. So I think you're right. I think this is a good way to go about doing it, and also one that reflects the input of a lot of people in this chamber, and something that I'm hopeful we can move forward on. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Discussion. Senator from Cape Girardeau, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
Do yield.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, and I appreciate the inquiry, but you do realize that this version is not the ticket per ticket sale credit. He went back to the original bill. So where are you talking about the $5 credit instead of activity?
I have it. My understanding is that we're on Senate Bill 588.
588, 585, the Senate Committee right. Substitute.
I have page 4, line 13, 14.
Page 4 of the Senate Committee Substitute? Mine is not 13, 14. Mine's like lines 94 through 130. Okay. It's okay. I appreciate so it. Mr. President?
Senator from Cape Girardeau.
To inquire the senator from Howell.
Senator from Howell. Senator from Wright, the senator from Cape Girardeau would like an inquiry. Do you yield?
Mr. President.
Yes.
To inquire the chair. This is your hand.
Yes, state your inquiry.
What is today?
April 3rd.
Thank you. Mr. President, to inquire the senator from Howe.
Senator from Howe, do you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. A few years ago, or not even a few years ago, a few months ago, we had a special session in the state of Missouri, and that dealt with a tax credit to Ford Motor Company and pension reform. Now, I was involved in the pension reform, and I supported the reforms to Missouri's pensions, or as the senator from the 13th will call them, reductions to the pension plans. I was more focused on the pension changes that we made during that special session, and I think you had some things to say about the Ford tax credits. Do I remember that right?
I think so. I think that was termed as, I believe the House now says that they won't pass tax credit reform because one senator could hold up and kill a tax credit reform. And I think that was an example that one senator can't stop anything over here.
Yeah, because so. I think at that time you were removed as the committee chair by Charlie Shields. Then you were given that chairmanship back.
Not under Charlie.
But
Senator Shields offered me the committee back, and I told him he could.
And then later, came forward. You mounted opposition to it. How did that turn out?
The
bill was passed, wasn't it?
Oh yeah.
Signed into law by the governor. Much fanfare. Going to create all these jobs.
I believe
jobs.
It was signed at the headquarters of the union in Kansas City.
Right. And then much fanfare. It was $100 million, I think.
Yeah, and the whole point was during the whole debate, it was not, you know, we've always used tax credits in the past to create jobs, to stimulate the economy. We have now backslidden so far that we have to pass tax credit bills just to keep the jobs we have. So we've gone past the point of job creation, and now we all have to offer incentives to have job retention.
And I'll do you one better. The House passed yesterday one of these angel investor tax credits where the sponsoring lobbyist, lawyer, law firm, whoever, that wanted to do the angel tax credits that only had 12, I think, votes in opposition to it. And I'm getting this from a tweet from one of the reporters, Virginia Young, that's sitting right over here. So she may remember this tweet. I was not at the committee hearing, but I actually saw that she tweeted the opening witness for the angel investment tax credits. And I'm paraphrasing her tweet, and she can probably go back unless she deleted it, but we all know through history on the federal level that deleting a tweet is not really deleting a tweet. I think there was a congressman that learned that lesson pretty hard. But anyway, I think that that tweet is out there that basically this guy sat down after the bill sponsors, the floor leader on the House side and then the minority leader, basically presented their bill, then their star witness, this lawyer, sat down, and to paraphrase the tweet that I saw from Virginia Young, because I was not at the hearing, basically said, these businesses are so risky that no one in their right mind would spend their own money on it, so we need to spend the government's money on these.
You know, we have a saying in the Ozarks.
So not only do we now have to, you know, spend money to save jobs, which we're going to get back to, we have to now take taxpayer dollars and expend them on such risky ventures that no one in their right mind would use their own money on them.
Well, they're saying a fool and his money are soon parted. I guess that describes the General Assembly when they invest taxpayer dollars in risky
unless you follow the money and understand the entities that are going to benefit from the General Assembly picking winners and losers, who gets the graces of this, who's behind the creation of these bills and has somehow redefined the human language to come to the decision that this is a worthy expenditure of taxpayer dollars. And I find it very interesting. I'm not going to be here next year. You're not. Term limits have hit. But I will be following from afar in either your compound and bunker, depending on how the Mayan calendar works out, or, you know, from Cape Girardeau. I will be following to see how all of these rural legislators weathered the fact that their school districts are not going to be fully funded. It's going to result in reductions, probably by DESE. Hopefully they'll follow the law and they'll reevaluate the state adequacy target. And the state adequacy target will result in Cape Girardeau, if they lower the state adequacy target to the funding, the projections that I have, is it'll be an $800,000 cut to the Cape Public Schools districts. And I know that other districts across the state will have similar reductions, but those legislators, all of them except for 12, that voted that they had enough money to fund the angel tax credits, which the star witness in support of it said, this is such a risky venture that we have to have the government's money, the taxpayers' money, in order to expend in it. They had plenty of money to authorize that, but not enough to fund their own schools. And I think it continues down this line of, if you just give us a little bit of money, whether it's for sports, whether it's for angels, and we're going to get back to Ford Motor Company, it will create all of this wonderfulness, when at the end of the day, it's never happened. And it's because I think any objective analysis, and I would love to see reports on this, but I'm not an editor of a newspaper and I don't task reporters on what they would have to report. But I would love to see some investigative reporting or any kind of studies or anything else that would compare all of the press release jobs Jay Nixon has announced since he's become governor to the real jobs that have actually been created since Jay Nixon, and do a net-to-net, because I'm here to show you, I received a news article. Now, this wasn't in one of the big media outlets. It wasn't in the Post-Dispatch. It wasn't in the Kansas City Star. It wasn't in the Springfield Newsleader. It wasn't in the Southeast Missourian. It was in a little publication called MissouriJournal.com is where I saw it. And the headline states, to get back to this special session and the point that you were making, we authorize tax credits to save jobs. So I just now see that the headline is, Ford files layoff notice hitting 100 or 1,222 workers. With one filing, Ford Motor Company more than doubles the number of layoffs in the state this month. The automaker reduced its workforce by 1,222 employees at its Clay Como facility near Kansas City on Friday. According to a worker adjustment and retraining notification filing posted online Thursday by the Missouri Department of Economic Development, the WARN Act requires employers to provide a 60-day notice in advance of covering mass layoffs. Before this latest mass layoff notice, employers across Missouri had already filed 8 notices affecting 1,207 employees this month, compared to 7 notices affecting 614 workers last month. The WARN Act filing increases the number of layoffs in the state compared to last month by 295.6%, reducing 2,429 jobs this month. Only 3 layoff notices were filed in January, impacting 229 workers. What I would like to see is an analysis and a comparison of net to net to net. We have all of these press releases that say jobs are going to be created, that tax credits made all of these jobs created. We had them down in CAPE. We had, you know, the governor run down to CAPE and was going to give $3 million to a convicted felon in tax credits to bring in a conglomerate of dentists in a failed scheme called Watch Me Smile. We've seen, announcements at Moberly. We've seen all of these announcements, press release after press release, promised economic development after promised economic development, tax credit after tax credit, crony capitalism after crony capitalism, Jefferson City politicians and bureaucrats picking and blessing what is going to work in society versus not working in society. And what we get is we get an enormous fanfare, and we get an enormous public information of announced jobs that have never been materialized. I remember all of the fanatic coverage by the media over Ford's announcement that they were going to add all of these jobs. Cats and dogs played together. The Palestinians and the Israelites communed with one. Jimmy Carter was popular again. All of the great, wonderful things in the world occurred. But the fact is that that investment has not happened. And we've got a layoff notice. We're not even saving those jobs.
I think you're missing the whole point. The point is if you go ahead and read, you know, later on, and I know this is a vast right-wing conspiracy or left-wing conspiracy.
Probably Bush's fault. I think it's Bush's fault. So I'm going to get I'm going to get right out in front of this, and I'm going to blame Dick Cheney and George Bush. Well, it's Dick Cheney's fault, and it's and get out from the bushes. I'm making that cry right now.
You, where you live at, you know, the new Madrid fault, they're going to name that Bush's fault.
So. Absolutely.
If you read about
I'm going to amend a House bill, that omnibus House transportation bill, where we've got 135 new license plates, 72 bridges, 42 different stretches of roads, all sorts of stuff, and I'm going to rename the New Madrid fault Bush's fault.
But this is the conspiracy part in me, but if you read on late October, the governor, you know, announced that Ford will add 1,600 new jobs over the next 4 years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you have 1,222 employees that are laid off. The question is whether this company has figured out a way that you can lay people off, and then you can hire them back as new workers and draw down the incentives again for the new jobs created. Because it says 1,600 new jobs over the next 4 years, but the statement was that they're not going to lay off 1,222 at this point and later.
No, we were all told that we were going to save the Clay Como jobs. Well, we were going to save the Clay Como jobs. Now, just call me silly, but go ask one of these affected 1,222 workers that gets laid off if he believes or she believes that that $100 million in tax credits saved their job. Now, it may very well be that at some point, that hasn't happened yet, still to this date, following the special session, that Ford will hire new people back. But at the end of the day, and I will give credit to the Post-Dispatch on this one, what we have is we have a new scheme by this Department of Economic Development, this administration, and the approval of this General Assembly that was started by a company called Liberty Mutual Group. Liberty Mutual Group, as reported by the Post-Dispatch, got $1.6 million in tax credits after they cut 45 jobs. Because basically what they did is they said, oh, well, we just reclassified those employees. We reduced their salaries by half. We didn't really lay them off. And then we hired them back at a lower salary and give us tax credits for it.
And that's got to be true because that was a report by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be. But I do know because I talked with the people and investigated this when I learned it, that was exactly true. So for people to say, well, these tax credits create these jobs and they're this great panacea of economic development, you know, first it was to create a net positive, which never ever materialized. Then it morphed into saving jobs. Now we're subsidizing the creation of fewer jobs.
Well, I've got another one for you. We have been entering the phrase of trading jobs also. Because I have an informant within the Department of Economic Development that talks to me once in a while about, you know, things that they see on the inside that creates problems. Because these people actually pay taxes too. And yeah. They see the investment of their tax dollars. But we've gotten into a situation where we now compete with states like Kansas. Kansas will offer an incentive to a job, to a manufacturer. We'll offer the same thing, and we'll trade. You know, their jobs, our Missouri jobs will go to Kansas.
You know how the House is going to fix that?
So in Kansas, jobs come over to us, and they receive our incentive. And the taxpayer loses, the company gains because they win by just crossing the state line, but no new jobs are created.
Correct.
Zero net jobs. We're just paying for the same thing over and over
again. But you know how the House is going to fix that?
Well, I hope so.
Well, the House passed another tax credit that said if Kansas offers a dollar, we're going to offer $1.50.
Well, that
regardless if it makes any economic sense or what.
When I heard about that bill, I envisioned an auction that we have where they get together and we hire an auctioneer to come in and people from Kansas are there and people from Missouri are there and we just go into an open bidding war and auction off the incentives right there on a live auction. That way the taxpayer can see where their money's going.
In the interest of full disclosure on all of that. Now, I appreciate all that. That's the insanity that we've reached in all these tax credits. That's the position that has come. Why are we here at the General Assembly dealing with this bill? It's because the city of St. Louis has given all its money away to a guy that doesn't even pay his local property taxes. I mean, why in the world are we even here in the General Assembly? If the city of St. Louis wants to bring in a sports deal, we've already built them a dome. We've already given them a baseball stadium. We've already built Washington Street. We've already built the Central West End.
Three senators standing at the same time. Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you kindly place that bill on the informal calendar?
That bill will be placed kindly on the informal calendar. Senator from Stoddard, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, would you please refer HCR 11, HCR 25, and the House Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 30 to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics?
Those bills will be so referred. The junior senator from St. Charles.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Announcements. Senator from the 23rd.
You, Mr. President, no further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 3 p.m. this day.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We will stand in recess until 3 p.m. this day.